This is Audible.
Sound Booth Theater and Spoken Realms present Vortina. Everybody Loves Large Chests, Volume 3. Written by Neven Ilyev. Narrated by Jeff Hayes. Prologue. Edward Allen, Royal Spymaster to the Lodrak Empire, stood in the extravagant courtyard of the Imperial Palace, his wizened face frowning intently at a griffin's butt. It wasn't so much that he was looking specifically at the thing's ass, but it was impossible not to have the titanic rump in his field of vision. What he was actually focused on was the enormous steel cargo container strapped immediately above said behind. More specifically, at the place where the doors to the giant metal box had been ripped from their hinges and the two empty cages within.
"So, someone care to explain what happened here?"
he asked the subordinates gathered around him.
"Reporting that the prisoner has escaped," the woman next to him stated.
"Brilliant observation zone."
Edward covered his face with one hand.
"I am so lucky to have such an attentive aide that it almost hurts to think about it."
Zone's face remained as expressionless as ever, though a light blush appeared on her cheeks. Praise from Edward was rare, so she couldn't help but be pleased by what she thought were words of encouragement.
Zone, that wasn't a compliment.
The man next to her rolled his eyes.
He was—
Forget it, bandit,
Edward interrupted.
You know she's immune to sarcasm. Or common sense, for that matter.
Well, forgive an old dog for holding out hope at least one of our merry little band might be normal.
Bandit sighed.
I could probably fix her if you let me.
A hooded man had arrived on the scene.
Just need a few weeks alone with her, and I promise I can make Zone here into the perfect servant.
Reporting that Operative Hook is in immediate threat of decapitation via roundhouse kick.
Zone's monotone voice carried a hint of menace.
Oh, scary, scary,
he said mockingly.
As if that would work on me.
Requesting that Operative Hook update his codename to Hooded Baldy.
Bandit, who had been trying to sneak a shot of liquor from his hip flask, spat it out in a fit of laughter.
A Hooded Baldy,
he chuckled.
That fits perfectly. Oh, fuck. I just spilt my volcanic vodka.
The drink in question was difficult to come by around these parts. One would be hard-pressed to find it even within its birthplace, the Horkensaft Kingdom to the northeast. The dwarves and gnomes of the kingdom were known for their exotic booze, but volcanic vodka was special. It was one of the few gnomish-made liquors, though it was an acquired taste rather than a delicacy, which made it even harder to find. Getting the stuff all the way to the Empire added yet another layer of difficulty, as direct travel between the two countries required one to pass over the treacherous Oculus Sea. It was a massive body of water at the heart of the continent, so named for the eye-like imprint it left on the map. It had once been dry land, but millennia ago the entire region had sunk into the depths of the earth, taking an ancient civilization or two along with it. A place like that naturally contained all sorts of hazards, from extreme weather conditions and incomprehensible currents to deadly sea creatures. Suffice to say, if Bandit wanted more of his drink, he'd have to get it himself. Though that would hardly be a problem. The dashing gentleman with black hair was responsible for providing logistical support to the Gilded Hand, Edward's personal spy ring. Some might call his activities smuggling or trafficking, but logistical support sounded much better on paper. He was good at it, too. Perhaps even the best. It was often said within the organization that if Bandit couldn't get something, nobody could. Going straight to the kingdom and back merely to fuel his appreciation for good alcohol was entirely within his capabilities.
This is my last bit of it, too,
he grumbled, putting the flask away.
Gonna have to stock up the next time I have a mission over in Pipsqueak territory.
Unfortunately, his responsibilities kept him from taking such flights of fancy.
If you three are done horsing around, then I suggest you do your blasted jobs.
Edward waved his hand.
Bandit, stop getting shit-faced and go put your worthless griffins away.
Hey, now, there's no need for that,
Bandit complained.
Fluffles and Puff did nothing wrong.
Ugh, Hook groaned. What sort of monster tamer gives cutesy names like those to flying war machines?
The kind that will bash your damn head in if you-
Hook, stop antagonizing Bandit and contact Question, Edward commanded. Fill him in and tell him to wrap things up on his end post-haste. I'll need him to track down our escaped prisoner. Yes, sir. Zone, go draw up a map of our route over the Sawblade Mountains. We'll need to organize a search right away.
The agents began diligently carrying out the spymaster's instructions. Even if they bickered and argued over trivial things, the Gilded Hand was nevertheless a tightly knit outfit. It was Edward's inner circle, and one didn't become part of it without proving their loyalty and ability at least a dozen times over. Granted, they were by no means the biggest powerhouses in the Empire when it came to combat, but their influence and political power within both the royal court and the underworld made them a force to be reckoned with. A specially designed pulley system soon relieved the griffins of their loads and deposited the box on the ground in front of them. Bandit led the creatures back to their roosts, while Zone quietly and dispassionately compiled the information that her boss had requested. The hooded Baldy, meanwhile, contacted their missing colleague with his formidable mind magic. He would have preferred to use his abilities to rip the secrets from the mind of Edward's captive, but that was clearly no longer an option. Such a shame, too. He'd never heard a mimic scream before, so he'd been rather looking forward to it.
Ah, sir? Question says he's already got an idea what happened to our suspect, reported Hook. He says it's your fault it got away.
Of course he does. Though he may actually have a point this time. Come with me. I'm going to inspect the container, and I need you and your psychotic brain to try to pick up any residual thoughts.
I think you meant to say psionic there, sir. I know what I said. Now move it. Yes, sir.
The two headed inside the slightly wrecked metal box and began their inspection. There were three points of interest there. The broken hinges, the gnome's mangled cage, and the mobile jail cell where Boxy was supposed to be restrained, yet was currently wide open. The first of those didn't reveal much information, other than the fact that the doors were very clearly no longer attached to the container. Though the prisoner should not have been able to tear them off with brute strength given the attributes and levels it had, there were other ways this could have happened. For example, if that crafty creature had somehow broken the lock, then the doors would have flown wide open mid-flight. Their hinges weren't designed to handle those kinds of violent air currents, so it would have been only a matter of time before the metal joints snapped. The real question was, how had the locks come undone in the first place? Hook was unable to pick up any abnormalities around the massive crate's entrance, but Edward spotted some peculiar marks along the floor and walls. It looked as though some sort of highly corrosive acid had been used to eat away at them, but there were no remnants of the liquid left anywhere in the area. The spymaster was a level 59 alchemist, so he was sure that this was not the work of an alchemical compound, but rather something created entirely by magic. Next was the cage where Corny Fizzlesprocket had been held. It had been torn into from the outside, almost as though it had been chewed. This was where Hook's psionic skills kicked in. Called psychometry, this ability allowed him to perceive the feelings that the object had been subjected to. It had its limitations, of course, but the cage was still warm, so it was no trouble for him to get a reading on its recent history.
"What do you have for me?"
Edward inquired. Hook removed his hand from the mangled remains of Fizzy's prison and stood, brushing the grime from his knees.
"Nothing but fear, loathing, and misery," he replied. "The most vivid images I got were a set of gigantic teeth crushing the bars, followed by a small, pink-haired woman disappearing into them. It cuts off abruptly after that."
"Ah, so it seems one of our missing persons has been eaten. A shame."
The gnome had been far too big a security risk for Edward to even consider letting her go free. The plan had been for Hook to rip the sensitive information from her noggin, after which she would be put to work designing and producing weaponry for the Empire. There were other ways of doing that, of course, but this had been a rare chance to use a master artificer without the Horkensaft Kingdom's knowledge or permission. These shorties kept a tight lid on their mechanical wonders and refused any requests from the Lodrak Empire to share those secrets in any way, shape, or form. Even though the two nations were officially on friendly terms at the moment, the kingdom wasn't stupid enough to lend even more strength to a military powerhouse like the Empire. All things considered, Edward viewed the gnome's apparent death as a minor footnote, a missed opportunity to do some good for the Empire. In short, a shame.
"You sure about that, sir?" Hook asked. "Typically, a violent death leaves a more noticeable mark. She was gobbled up by a malicious, starving monster, one who wouldn't have even been in our custody if she hadn't turned on it. Frankly, I'd have already written her off as dead even without your psychometry if it wasn't for the possibility that the mimic had outside assistance."
"You think someone broke the prisoner out, sir? Mid-flight? At that altitude?"
Hook was well aware that magic could be used to facilitate flight. He himself had one such spell at his disposal, unsurprisingly called flight. However, there were limits to the speed and heights one could reach through such methods, and griffins could surpass those easily. Yet, Edward appeared to be suggesting that someone had managed not only to intercept them in transit, but also break the prisoner out without the griffin's senses picking up on such a dangerous individual. It was by no means impossible, but it was highly unlikely, to say the least.
"The evidence would appear to suggest it. See here."
Edward led his subordinate to the back of the container and the remains of the monster's cage.
"The control box was shorted out with magically conjured acid."
"I seem to remember something about that," Hook said thoughtfully. "Didn't the report say that some of the guards it killed just before its capture were covered in acid burns?"
"Exactly. It may be a mimic, but our friend can somehow spit caustic fluid. That was why I had it bound with mana-draining shackles. It should have been impossible for it to conjure acid from thin air on zero MP."
"But it still did?"
"That's what someone wants us to think. See here? The cage is unlocked. Unlocked, not mangled or forced open, and there are no scratches to indicate that it was tampered with. I dare say someone used a key to allow it to escape. The acid is only there to cover their involvement."
"How do you know it didn't slip out of its restraint somehow?"
"Are those eyes of yours just for decoration? Look at your feet!"
Hook immediately realized what his superior officer was referring to. The floor was covered in what had once been viscous yellow mimic blood, but had since dried into a foul-looking gunk with an odd orange-brown coloration. There were also bits of dead flesh and a few metal bolts, which had been firmly glued to the floor by the grotesque residue.
"Someone carved out its restraints?"
"Certainly looks that way."
Edward's voice was grim.
"Which is why I want you to confirm what you can with your psychometry."
"Right. Best get to it, then."
The psionic stepped up to the cage and gripped two of the bars. He closed his eyes and listened. Monsters were more difficult to read than people since their minds worked differently, so he was expecting to have to dig deep. Yet almost immediately he was assaulted with visions. Images of pure white knives digging into flesh flashed beneath his eyelids, nightmare-inducing screams rang in his ears, and a profound sense of agony stabbed into his brain. Under the circumstances, it was only natural that he'd scream.
"Fuck!"
Hook recoiled in shock.
"Holy shit! That took me by surprise!"
"What? What did?"
"This cage is suffused with suffering. It's so overwhelming that I can hardly feel anything else.
Any chance it could have done this on its own somehow?"
Hook took a long look at the cage. After a second, he shook his head.
"This is beyond a wild beast chewing off its own leg that's been caught in a trap. There's a limit to how much self-harm a body will allow its owner to inflict before their own reflexes and instincts put a stop to it. I can't imagine any living being capable of inflicting this much pain upon itself. But I'm no expert on monsters, so I wouldn't bet my life on it."
Edward carefully considered Hook's words. Although monsters did follow certain behavioral patterns, deviations and anomalies had been known to occur. But ultimately, the narrative just didn't fit. Even if his prisoner had had the means and determination to gouge out its own flesh, it wouldn't have had the MP to disable the cage's electric field. Even if it could have escaped its bindings, it would have just fallen to the bottom of the cage and been zapped into unconsciousness. Then death.
So, someone else cut its restraints away after all?
It was the more likely scenario by far.
Looks that way, sir,
Hook confirmed.
Can you tell me anything about them?
No. Like I said, the agony attached to this thing is so overpowering that I can't make out anything else. But if I were to offer my professional opinion, whoever did this made sure it hurt as much as possible, just because he could. A real sick piece of work, to be sure.
Hook's words carried quite a bit of weight, given that he was the leading expert on special interrogation techniques within the Guild at hand.
Takes one to know one, I suppose, Edward mumbled.
Which was a fancy way of saying that Hook was an irredeemable, sadistic bastard who enjoyed torturing people for funsies. His mental methods were far more effective for extracting information, but there were advantages to his more physical practices as well. Admittedly, breaking people through pain and suffering was barbaric, but the spymaster knew from experience that it was an effective way of making them subservient and obedient. It was something he could always fall back on as a last resort, since not everyone could be coerced through bribery, trickery, or holding loved ones hostage. In fact, Corny Fizzlesprocket had been one such person. If everything had gone as planned, she would have been educated by Hook to make sure she didn't get any bright ideas while carrying out Edward's wishes. She had definitely seemed like the sort of sheltered and naive person that could easily be controlled through fear and torture, though that was something of a moot point now.
Hook, get in touch with Question. Tell him everything we've learned and to begin working on tracking down our mystery jailbreaker. After that, inform Mist to start looking into dungeon core extraction techniques.
Yes, sir. What about the Emperor? He's going to want a report on our progress with the Calamity investigation.
So?
What do I tell him?
Edward had initially instructed Hook to keep the truth behind Boxy's identity as the likely perpetrator under wraps. The monster they'd been bringing back was supposedly a strong lead, nothing more.
That's simple. We'll tell him the truth, Edward said. With the aid of their spies inside the Empire, an elite agent from the Ishigar Republic removed their pet mass murderer from our custody in order to cover their tracks.
That would surely be more than enough to convince their hot-headed buffoon of an emperor to not only declare war on the Elven Nation, but also to give his spymaster more authority and freedom. All in the name of national security, of course. Edward's closest compatriots were, of course, well aware of his plans. They knew just as well as he did that this Boxy T. Morningwood had no ties whatsoever to the Ishigar Republic. Or at least, that had been the case prior to the calamity of Mon Atal. Someone important had clearly taken an interest in the thing for them to dare to snatch it from Edward's clutches so brazenly. But as of right now, they had no evidence that the elves were responsible.
Sir?
Hook spoke up.
I don't mean to question your methods or whatnot, but half of what you just said sounded made up.
And?
Asked the spymaster.
And? How is that telling the Emperor the truth?
Come now, Hook. You should know better than to ask that by now.
Edward smirked, giving him a light tap on the side of the head.
The truth isn't a matter of factual accuracy. It's a matter of perspective and belief. And that gullible moron? He'll see and believe anything that furthers his needs.
Chapter 1 Of Gnomes and Monsters, Part 1. Fizzy and Boxy trudged through the woods. It had been 5 days since their escape and subsequent meeting with Reginald, the God of Impossibility. Right now, they were mostly wandering around aimlessly, looking for signs of an undead incursion or some form of civilization that might offer information. The gnome had already been relieved of her prisoner's rags and outfitted with items from Boxy's storage. She held a steel dagger in her right hand and a small round buckler in her left, although they seemed more like a short sword and a kite shield due to her small stature. A slightly too large chainmail shirt covered her torso and hung down to her knees like a dress even after Boxy had shortened it for her. Dark stains dotted the collar, though the gnome was too afraid to ask if they were blood. She had had to fashion her own undergarments using old rags and loose string, and a set of old shoes covered her feet, though she had reinforced the toe area with some creative application of metal plates, nails, and wire. All the seemingly random things inside Boxy's storage were like a treasure trove to an artificer. Fizzy had been understandably surprised when she'd learned of the skill's existence, but she had quickly grasped its function. It was widely known that high-level enchanters and merchants had access to a similar skill called item box, so the concept wasn't foreign to her. As to why a dungeon mimic would have something like that, that seemed to be somehow related to its chesty heritage. Regardless of its origin, the pocket dimension had allowed her to throw together some basic clothing, so she wasn't about to complain. Her creations did little more than protect her modesty, but they were still better than walking around wearing an old potato sack. She would have obviously preferred real clothes, but there was a distinct absence of those within Boxy's hoard. It did contain quite a few blacksmith-forged arms and armor, though, and the ones it had given Fizzy had been chosen based on what it had learned of her status. General information. Corny Fizzlesprocket. Gnome. Female. 22 years old. Member of Arosa Craftsmen's Union. Level 56 Arclight Artificer. Level 13 Paladin. 485 out of 485 HP. Plus 0.8 per second. 560 out of 560 MP. Plus 1.5 per second. Attributes. Strength, 65. Dexterity, 172. Agility, 20. Endurance, 84. Intelligence, 112. Wisdom, 154. Perception, 141. Faith, 12. Luck, 7. Artificer skills. Clockwork expertise. Level, 10. Max. Explosives handling. Level, 6. Deconstruction. Level, 7. Optics expertise. Level, 4. Physics. Level, 7. Component forging. Level, 6. Tick counter. Level, 5. Upgrade. Level, 4. Arclight Artificer skills. Electrical expertise. Level 2. Paladin skills. Champion of Chaos, level 3. Toughness, level 5. Strength of Faith, level 2. Other skills. Mentor, level 2. Dagger mastery, level 4. Shield mastery, level 3. Since her primary job was the artisan type, that left most of her physical attributes completely undeveloped for her apparent level. Her maximum HP immediately after getting the paladin job had not even been 200. It really was no surprise her relatives had been taken out so easily if they were this frail. The upside was that her dexterity attribute was reasonably developed, so a piercing weapon like a dagger would do her the most good right now. She would probably transition to something more suitable, like swords or maybe maces, once her other parameters caught up, but the knife would suffice for the time being. The shield was to make sure that she didn't accidentally up and die. That wouldn't be funny at all. Shield mastery also provided her with the endurance and strength necessary to improve both her conditioning and her max HP, which for the moment was to be her top priority. Dagger mastery, on the other hand, allowed even a self-proclaimed pacifist like her to rapidly become familiar with that class of weaponry. Both of these skills were vital to an absolute beginner like her, which was why Boxy and Fizzy had begun sparring almost immediately after their meeting with the God of Luck. Well, sparring was perhaps not quite the right word. It would be better to say that the mimic willingly became the gnome's pincushion for a while. Fizzy had been apprehensive at first, but by the end she had actually seemed to enjoy venting her frustration by stabbing the monster over and over. Boxy had taken the abuse silently, as it had allowed her to raise her dagger mastery to about halfway past level 2. But, frustratingly, it refused to go higher than that. Still, it was a promising start, in the chest's opinion. As for shield mastery, she simply practiced blocking the mimic's blows. It had been immensely difficult at first, but she had gotten the hang of it much quicker than Boxy had expected. Which was good, because her training was just as difficult for her sparring partner. The murder train that was Boxy T. Morningwood had only two speeds, walk and kill, and this was the first time in its life it had had to hold back. There was no way Fizzy would survive a full-force blow from the monster even if she could have blocked it. though the exercises had helped the mimic to learn a little something about controlling its strength, so it wasn't as though it had gotten nothing from their sessions. But, as with the weapon skill, shield mastery refused to go more than halfway above level 2. It appeared that there was a limit to what one could learn hitting the same target over and over, and that actual combat would be necessary for both mastery skills to properly grow. That was going to be tricky, as it meant that the gnome would have to fight for her life for real. The knowledge within those passive abilities had taught her the basics of using her new equipment, but the monsters in this neck of the woods were still too much for a beginner like her to handle. Boxy disliked having to go to so much trouble for such a scrawny morsel, especially considering the part she had played in its imprisonment, but it didn't have much choice. The humans had deprived it of its warlock job by force, so it could no longer rely on snack and arms for backup. The deal it had made with Rupert, the god of coincidences, promised to see those skills and levels restored, but the lich that it had to kill in order to prove its worth was unlikely to be easy prey. It wanted to do everything in its power to maximize its chances of victory, which meant mentally and physically conditioning Fizzy to become a fighter.
Yeah!
A hoarse, bleating sound cut through the wilderness, interrupting the pair's aimless wandering.
Oh no, not again!
Fizzy lamented. That bleat meant two things. They were about to be attacked, and the gnome would have to be put in a safe place. The latter was why the mimic promptly wrapped the apprehensive gnome in its tongue tentacles and tossed her into storage, much to her dismay.
Meh!
Another bleat, this one subtly different from the first. It was followed by two more before four humanoid figures leapt from the shadows to surround the half-spider, half-box. These monsters had the horns and hooves of a ram or goat, with the torso and arms of a human. Their entire bodies were covered in thick brown fur, with most of their mass concentrated around their powerful legs. Unsettling yellow goat eyes sized up the strange creature in their midst, their makeshift bone-tipped spears pointed threateningly at the bizarre abomination. The monsters were officially known as satyrs, though adventurers and villagers alike preferred to call them goatmen. They moved in groups of 3 to 6 and mercilessly attacked anything that wasn't their own kind, at times even fighting and killing each other over petty things like breeding rights. They were really quite violent for a bunch of herbivores. As for their strength, Boxy estimated it to be roughly equal to a level 50 to 60 adventurer, based mostly on their apparent HP and XP gained by killing them.
Yeah.
The one with the longest beard gave a sharp bleat, and all four satyrs charged the mimic at once, intending to skewer it with their weapons. This merciless and deadly strategy was what had allowed them to become the dominant monster species in this region of the Sawblade Mountains. Not only magical beasts, but even adventurers and soldiers would find their lives taken from them in an instant by the attack. However, none of the pack's past victims had been anything like Boxy T. Morningwood. Rather than weather their combined attack, Boxy launched one of its own and leapt into the air towards the one that appeared to be in charge. The satyr had apparently expected this and quickly adjusted the angle of his spear. The goat and the box collided in midair, the satyr's weapon piercing the mimic clean through its midsection. You have suffered a deep wound. HP minus 326. Your flesh has been mended. HP plus 140. Ignoring the wound that would be gone in a few seconds, Boxy bit deeply into the satyr's shoulders and upper torso with its steel-coated teeth, trapping the beast's horned head inside its maw. They fell to the ground, the toothed box refusing to release its victim. The other three goatmen approached, attempting to stab the mimic, but were forced back with a wide spray of corrosive acid. They could only watch in horror as Boxy chewed mercilessly on their leader, his limbs flailing helplessly as he died. The sound of metal on metal rang out as the mimic's jaws snapped fully shut, separating the satyr's head and torso from the rest of his body. Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 43 mimic, all attributes plus 2. With their leader dead, the rest of the satyrs were clearly losing their nerve. Being splashed with burning acid hadn't exactly helped morale, either. They didn't quite turn tail and run, but they were visibly hesitant to approach Boxy. Not that the mimic had any intention of letting them go. They had made the incredibly poor decision to open the hurt box, and now they would get what was coming to them.
Hissah!
Voxy let out a guttural, hissing roar, and they shrank back, looking apprehensive. The mimic brandished its mithril daggers and a steel sword and proceeded to educate them on the finer points of bladed weapon combat. First, it sliced the second satyr's hands clean off, its sword piercing the beast's heart. Using another of its many legs, the mimic threw the second satyr's spear at the third. It was a poor throw that hit him in the knee with the shaft rather than the tip, but it was enough to make him fall over. Before he could recover, Boxy swooped in and slashed several deep wounds into his other leg, effectively crippling the goat man for what little was left of his life. The mimic wasn't done with its victim quite yet, though. It proceeded to nail the beast in place, driving its sword straight through the wounded creature's waist and into the soft ground underneath. The satyr struggled and cried, but couldn't muster the strength to free himself from the painful position. The last of the goatmen turned, presumably to fetch more of his friends, but the mimic had already anticipated this. It threw a huge rock that caught the fleeing satyr right in the back of the head, knocking him face first into the dirt. Boxy leapt onto the creature's back and wrapped a few more improvised limbs around the goatman, subduing him completely. All in all, it had taken less than 30 seconds to dismantle the would-be ambush. It was a textbook example of how monster-on-monster conflicts usually played themselves out. Quick, merciless, and messy. Two of the satyrs lay dead, another was literally pinned to the ground, bleeding heavily, and the last was held in place under Boxy's weight. Now that the situation was under control, the mimic opened its maw and spat fizzy out. The gnome fell to the ground with a small thud, gasping for breath. She panted, desperately trying to alleviate the tightness in her chest. The mimic's pocket dimension was a horrible, claustrophobic space utterly devoid of light, gravity, and, most importantly, air circulation. Boxy had to fill it with fresh air every time it threw the gnome in there, or else she'd suffocate. Even then, she only had enough air to last for a few minutes, at most. The goat-like bleeding from the pinned, but mostly unharmed, satyr drew Fizzy's attention. She glanced at the captive monster, her expression pained in apprehension of what would inevitably follow. And indeed, just as expected, a bald, pointy-eared head formed on the box's surface, its tone demanding.
Kill.
The gnome picked herself up from the ground, approaching the restrained satyr warily. This was already a familiar pattern. She'd known full well that the command would come, but that never made it any easier. In fact, the anticipation before the act was almost the worst part. She screwed up her courage, gripped her dagger with both hands, and thrust it into the satyr's neck with a small yell. You have inflicted a shallow wound. Target HP, -86. Unfortunately, it didn't pierce very far. Just enough to cause the monster to wail and thrash, though it stood no chance of escaping Boxy's grasp. Fizzy withdrew her weapon and struck again, and then again, and again, over and over. Black blood gushed, flowing freely from the wounds. The satyr howled and bleated in desperation at its growing paladin-inflicted agony. The kind-hearted gnome wasn't torturing the creature on purpose, though. She fully understood Boxy's reasoning and held no real sympathy for the vile beasts, but she still wished that she could at least end the beast's life without needless suffering. Unfortunately, her tiny body simply lacked the necessary strength to sever its life in one clean hit. The satyr's thick hide and dense muscles were difficult to cut into, and it took almost 2 minutes of abuse before the monster finally died with one last gurgling bleat. Level up. Congratulations, you are now a level 14 paladin. Strength, +2. Endurance, +2. Intelligence, +2. The mostly unwilling executioner gasped for breath, a slightly dazed look in her eyes. The mimic lifted itself off the dead satyr, going to fetch his crippled friend. It removed the sword from its fleshy sheath and wrapped its tentacles around the goatman, ignoring the desperate cries of pain as it dragged him along the ground. The poor creature clawed furiously at the dirt in an attempt to get away, though it was a wasted effort. His arms had no strength left. But the satyr was far beyond rationality. After witnessing the murder of his kin, he was terrified that he would be next. And he was right. Boxy brought the struggling creature before the gnome, pinning him to the ground next to his dead friend.
Kill!
With a sigh, the weary gnome gritted her teeth and did as instructed. It was just as gruesome as the first had been. At least this time it was over quickly, since the satyr had already been heavily injured. Now that all hostiles in the immediate area were dead, Fizzy's face broke into a huge smile. She threw back her head, raising her bloodied hands to the cloudy sky.
Victory for chaos!
Level up. Congratulations, you are now a level 15 paladin. Strength, +2. Endurance, +2. Intelligence, +2. Proficiency level increased. Champion of Chaos is now level 4. Faith, +2. Luck, +2. Her mad expression vanished in the next instant, returning to the exhaustion of moments ago. Her outburst had been completely beyond her control, a clear sign that the Goddess of Uncertainty had a firm hold over her new follower. Though this sort of relationship between paladin and patron deity certainly wasn't unique. Every paladin started out with a champion skill of the divine being he or she had sworn allegiance to. Paladins of Teresa, for example, were champions of justice. Paladins serving Axel, patron deity of war and combat, would be champions of war, while those who worshipped Solus, the sun god, were champions of life. A priest or a monk would have a similar skill, except that they were apostles or disciples instead of champions. And of course, each of the skill variants came with its own set of effects, their main function being to keep the deity's faithful servants from straying too far from their path. At least, that was the tactful way of putting it. A more cynical way would be to say that the gods used these skills to enforce their worldview onto their mortal servants. It wasn't nearly as bad as it sounded, though. The divine influence manifested itself as hints and urges rather than overt mind control. It was the same even in Fizzy's case, though she must have been the only paladin ever to have their job forced on them by a god or goddess. Since the poor gnome had ultimately been strong-armed into serving a random, ominous, and supremely unreliable, god-like Philip, it was only natural that she would try to reject his particular brand of faith. She desperately wanted the Champion of Chaos skill gone, hopefully before it sent her stark raving mad. The skill ever so slightly warped her perception of the world around her, sometimes giving her glimpses of things that would happen a split second or two in the future. This was admittedly useful in combat as it allowed her to occasionally predict an opponent's movements, but it also had its downsides. She often had trouble differentiating now from the immediate future. Either that or her limited precognition would prove to be wrong, tricking her into taking actions she shouldn't have. It wasn't something she couldn't get used to, but acclimating to it would take some time. The real problem she had with the skill was that it occasionally forced its holder to spout inane phrases, like she had just now. At least this time it had been fairly coherent, rather than drivel like, "Socks for the sock god," or "Pickles are yummy, yummy, yummy in my tummy." She didn't even like pickles. Of course, there was a way that she could break free from the God of Chaos. All she had to do was voluntarily undergo a job removal. The potentially traumatic procedure was something that only royal scribes of level 60 and above could perform, and was heavily regulated by the government. Which, incidentally, was why a certain spymaster had his own personal scribe. Some job removals needed to be kept off the books, after all. The majority, however, were performed as punishment for violent yet powerful criminals with no hope of redemption, though this wasn't always possible. The scribe performing the job removal needed to be at a higher level than the job they were trying to take away. Boxy had been unlucky in that regard, as the two jobs it had lost had only been at levels 25 and 12. On the other hand, one could argue that the mimic had gotten off easy, as having too many skills and attributes ripped from one's being came with any number of nasty side effects. Individuals who had been forcibly relieved of a vocation at level 70 or higher did not always survive the process. Those who did often went mad or catatonic, while others were left physically crippled or partially paralyzed. And even if their bodies or minds remained intact, their spirits were inevitably broken by a deep depression which ended in suicide more often than not. Although Fizzy had heard the stories, she was sure that wouldn't happen to her. Her paladin job was nowhere near that advanced. Plus, she would be willingly letting the job go, so she was at far less risk of suffering any side effects. Except extreme happiness, perhaps. In fact, if anything was making her want to kill herself, it was the job. And her current daily routine.
No good,
Boxy said. The words that the gnome never wanted to hear again put a stop to her fantasies of a better life. Or at least a less shitty one.
No good,
it repeated.
Still weak.
I can't help it,
she insisted, still gasping for air.
I'm a gnome, you know. I don't have a monster's body like you do. My people are the physically weakest enlightened on the continent. Probably even the world.
Her inherent lack of muscle mass was something that no number of levels or attributes would solve, as such things only improved upon one's base physical or mental abilities. It was possible to bulk up and gain extra muscle power through a strict exercise regime, but the limitations of race and gender would always be unsurmountable. Even if a gnome like Fizzy had 800 strength, she would still be outmatched by a human with half that amount.
Not that!
However, it appeared that the mimic was referring to something else. While it was true that gnomes had a far shorter reach and lacked the raw force of larger enlightened, they were far superior in other ways.
Your arms are weak, but hands are fast and wits even faster. Sharp eyes, can see blows coming clearly. Reaction time and stamina could use work, but those are easy to fix with practice.
As an expert in the art of murder, it was Boxy's opinion that gnomes could be just as adept at fighting as any other race, so long as they applied themselves correctly. And it was precisely that the mimic had taken issue with.
Your big problem. You hesitate,
it continued.
You care. These are untasty, stupid thoughts. Pointless distractions. They dull the blade and weaken your attacks.
Over the past few days, Fizzy had figured out that good and tasty were synonyms in Mimicanese. Using said knowledge, she understood the monster's words to mean that the unwillingness with which she carried out its instructions was apparently her biggest weakness as a fighter. But that wasn't as easily remedied as Boxy seemed to think.
I can't help it. Until a week ago, I was just a girl working on her gadgets. Last month, my biggest worry was whether or not I'd be able to find a cheap supply of blast powder. You can't expect me to be cruel like you so easily.
No. Cruel one is you.
What?
You hesitate. You cause prey suffering. Should finish quickly. Not tasty if they struggle.
The mimic had actually meant that last bit literally. It found that prey had the best flavor if it had died instantly, without struggle. But it did, however unintentionally, make a valid point. The gnome's unwillingness to cause pain was, ironically, causing her victims undue pain. It really wasn't a question of if the creatures had to die. That outcome was practically inevitable once Boxy had a hold of them. The only thing that mattered was how their end would come. That it would be easier on everyone involved if she just got the killing over and done with was something with which Fizzy begrudgingly agreed. Actually putting it into practice, however, was no easy task.
All right! Okay, I'll do better next time.
Liar!
A spidery limb slapped her across the face, which was another way of saying that the mimic kicked her in the head. She stumbled backwards.
Said that yesterday!
This time it hit her in the stomach, knocking the wind out of her. She fell, unable to even scream, let alone keep her balance.
Do better now!
A downward strike left the faint imprint of her body in the moist soil.
Not tomorrow! Worthless! Useless meat! Not even good as snack! Mercy is for idiots! Learn to not care!
It continued to hit and insult her as she curled into the fetal position. She lay there, taking the abuse and quietly whimpering, not even considering fighting back. It would be over soon anyway. This was just another part of her new daily routine. The two of them would come across some monsters, and Boxy would decide that they had to die. Fizzy would either be thrown into the dark, suffocating storage, or be forced to fend for herself. If the enemy was a mountain troll, a twin-tailed wolf, or one of the enormous strangling serpents, she was required to fight them alone. They were lower on the local food chain and only half as dangerous as the satyrs, but they were still too much for her. Boxy often had to bail her out and then beat her for her incompetence. If their opponent was something tougher, like those goatmen or maybe a pack of hobgoblins, the mimic would mop them up and leave one or two alive for her to execute. It was all for the sake of raising her levels, yet she hesitated to hurt them every single time, which resulted in more beatings. Her diet consisted of whatever prey she had killed, either today or the day before. Luckily, Boxy had nabbed her mana-fueled welder from her shop, so she was allowed to start a fire to grill the monster meat as best she could. Unfortunately, she had no idea what she was doing and had failed to cook her food all the way through the first time she'd tried it, giving herself food poisoning in the process. Another time, she had tried foraging for berries, but didn't know which ones were edible and ended up getting poisoned for real. She had recovered from both incidents well enough, but only because the mimic had treated her with some of its leftover potions and all-purpose antidotes. She'd then been beaten for wasting its limited resources. It seemed as though beatings comprised about half of her days, now that she thought about it. Boxy could always find some excuse to hit her. If she was tired from all the walking and fell too far behind, she was beaten for trying to escape. If she slept for over 5 or 6 hours, she was beaten for being lazy. If she dared to question Boxy's methods, she was beaten for being a traitorous worm. The only time she wasn't in danger of being physically abused was when she was thrown into storage, but that was its own special kind of suffering. The beatings were so common that she was actually growing somewhat accustomed to the pain. They were also as severe as they were regular, to the point where her endurance attribute had risen by 3 points. This was not a good thing, however, as Boxy would surely only intensify its abuse should it find out.
"What level?"
This day, however, seemed to hold a pleasant surprise for her, as the monstrous chest had cut the punishment short in order to question her.
15,
she answered, tears filling her eyes.
"What new skills?"
Just a second, okay? Skill list. Paladin.
Just like when she'd reached levels 5 and 10, she was offered 2 new skills. Of course, it was Boxy who decided which skills she would take. So far, it had advised her to choose toughness and strength of faith. The former worked much like the mimic's own natural armor, though it improved the performance of any and all metal armor the paladin wore rather than fortifying her hide. The latter allowed the paladin's melee attacks to draw on the power of their faith attribute in addition to their strength, with an added bonus when striking the undead. The God of Chance had indeed given her the best job to assist Boxy in their lich-hunting quest. However, what would most contribute to their goal was the faith attribute, which was why the mimic was focusing on it. According to her status, it amplified the effects of holy spells while also increasing the likelihood of receiving guidance from Werner in the form of divine revelations. The latter was largely worthless in Boxy's opinion, but the former was another matter entirely. Purifications, blessings, exorcisms, and healing magic were deemed to be of utmost importance, hence it had forced her to focus on skills related to that attribute. It had a hunch that doing so would eventually give her access to such incantations, and it would appear that its guess had been right on the money. Holy Scripture. The gods will graciously share their power and their secrets, but only with those willing to accept them. Requirements: Level 15 Paladin, Intelligence 40, Wisdom 20. Type: Passive. Range: Self. Effects: Grants knowledge of sacred texts and divine rituals. Grants knowledge of a holy spell at level 1, 3, 6, 8, and 10 of this skill. Increases the effectiveness of holy spells by 2% per level of this skill. This kind of skill was familiar to the mimic, the so-called library-type skills that bestowed knowledge of magic not otherwise available through one's job. In theory, one could study and learn the spells without the assistance of a skill, but doing so would require time and resources that neither Fizzy nor Boxy were willing to devote. Proficiency level increased. Holy Scripture is now level 1. Intelligence plus 2. Faith plus 2. You have learned a new spell. Holy Light.
Okay!
The abused gnome whimpered.
I learned Holy Light!
What does it do?
It heals the living and burns the undead.
Show me!
Fizzy stood and began to chant the spell, focusing it on herself. But her exhaustion caused her to fumble the words, and the magic exploded in a flash of blinding light and a weak wave of concussive force. This failure made Boxy smack her a few times while demanding she
do it right!
The gnome fought back her tears and frantically tried again, this time making sure to follow the arcane formula in her head more carefully. It was actually surprisingly easy once she visualized it as just another circuit.
Holy Light!
Her second attempt was successful, and a radiant yellow-green glow enveloped her bruised and beaten body. Divine power has healed your wounds. HP plus 145. The light soothed her pain immediately, wrapping her in a feeling of warm comfort that lasted for only an instant.
How was it?
The mimic asked.
I feel better now.
Not you! How much did it do?
145 HP.
Weak! Did you get mastery?
No.
Then use it again!
Holy Light!
Divine power has healed your wounds. HP plus 145. Proficiency level increased. Holy Mastery is now level 1. Faith plus 4.
Okay! I got the Holy Mastery now!
Just as Boxy had expected, the first level of mastery had been easy enough to acquire. It would hopefully serve as a foundation that would keep Fizzy from fumbling her spells in the future, at least in theory.
Cast it again!
The mimic commanded, and the gnome complied.
Holy Light!
Now?
160.
Still too weak, Boxy declared. Must level the skill. Cast it again!
But I'm already at full HP!
It then bludgeoned her hard enough to knock her over and stomped on her stomach, dealing a total of 154 HP worth of damage in the process.
Cast it again!
Fizzy stood, whimpering, and prepared to heal herself once more. It would seem the tiny paladin's hardships were just beginning. Part 2. The black-furred, twin-tailed wolf lunged at its prey, its sharp fangs attempting to bite the small, pink thing in half. It was so tiny it probably could have run upright between the wolf's legs. As a matter of fact, that was exactly what the gnome did to evade the attack. Rather than attempt to best the wolf in a contest of raw physical strength, she dove under its ferocious bite and rolled. The wolf yelped as something cold and sharp ripped through its leg. It leapt aside to put some distance between itself and the tiny thing, landing a good 3 or 4 meters away. It turned to continue the attack, but Fizzy was nowhere to be seen. After a moment of confusion, it once more felt its body being carved into from below. The wolf howled and hopped away again, but the same thing happened a second time. And a third. Finally, the beast realized that its afternoon snack was somehow able to keep up with it, despite its clearly superior speed. It gave up on trying to move out of the way and decided to simply flatten the offending creature with its weight. After all, it was a tiny thing and looked as though it would squash easily with just a little bit of effort. Fizzy rolled out from under the wolf just as its massive body came crashing down, missing her completely and landing directly on top of the dagger lodged in the soft dirt. The beast whined in agony as its own weight drove the steel blade deeper than the gnome could ever have done by herself. It was a huge wound, but one that Fizzy could only inflict by effectively disarming herself. That was why she carried another weapon, though it wasn't a backup one. It was far more accurate to say the dagger was merely the opening act. She reached over her shoulder and gripped the rubberized metal handle poking up behind her. She gave it a twist and a pull to release it from its holding clamp on her back and brought it to her side, holding it firmly with both hands. She dashed around the wolf's huge body, now right at her eye level. The pint-sized paladin's eyes and weapon both shone with yellow-green light as she took a wide horizontal swing. The illuminated mace-like object in her hand smashed against the monster's head before it could muster enough strength to pull itself up from the ground. You have inflicted major blunt force trauma. Target HP, -246. Proficiency level increased. Mace mastery is now level 4. Strength, +4. The wolf yelped pathetically as it collapsed. The blow had cracked its skull and smashed its jaw, but it still clung tenaciously to life. An issue that was resolved moments later when the blood-stained hunk of metal swung down a second time. You have inflicted major blunt force trauma. Target HP, -307. Proficiency level increased. Divine Wrath is now level 3. Faith, +3. Strength, +1. The wolf's head splattered against the ground with a wet, disgusting noise. Bits of brain and blood splashed onto the gnome's face and hair, but she didn't seem to care, or even notice, as she lifted her weapon above her head. She made another downward swing, just to make sure that it was as dead as it appeared. More wolf bits flew everywhere as the monster's head became a bloody pulp. Satisfied with her victory, Fizzy lifted the improvised weapon and wiped it clean as best she could against the beast's fur. As she waited for the magical glow to fade, she inspected it for any new dents or blemishes. The item was not something one would normally consider a weapon, but Fizzy had learned to make do with what she had. Although not immediately apparent due to all the filth caked on it, the lump of steel in her hands was actually an adjustable wrench, a tool which, much like the rest of the instruments in Fizzy's shop, had been enchanted to fortify its durability. Not that she had ever been able to use this thing for its intended purpose. After all, it was nearly a meter long, far too unwieldy for someone of her short stature to use as an artificer's tool. Strictly speaking, it was too large even for human-sized tinkerers. The only possible use for such a thing would require a stupidly large-scale project, and the fizzle sprockets of Erosa had never been that lucky. In fact, the only reason it was even in Fizzy's fidgety widgets in the first place was because it was a novelty that had been gifted to Corny's father, the original Fizzy. As to how the wrench had found itself in her possession, Boxy had simply picked it up when it had looted her shop. Fizzy, oddly enough, wasn't the least bit upset that she had been robbed blind. In fact, she was glad that her things hadn't been taken by that corrupt asshole of a spymaster, particularly her father's lightning thrower. Boxy hadn't been stupid enough to give her the weapon outright, but she found solace in the fact that it was still, in a manner of speaking, nearby. The mimic still allowed her to assemble a few small utility gadgets from the random parts inside its storage, and now Fizzy had finally found a use for the stupidly enormous wrench. All things considered, the animate chest's hoarding habits had proven to be quite tasty. After noting a tiny new dent on one side of her wrench, she sheathed it and turned her attention back to the wolf. Grunting with effort, she rolled it onto its side and removed the dagger stuck in its belly. With practiced ease, she began carving up the meat that was to become her dinner, moving mechanically as she did so. Her bruised face showed no hint of squeamishness, disgust, or any other emotion despite being elbow-deep in monster guts. Her once bright and attentive green eyes now appeared dull and lifeless, seeing the bloody mess before her as just another day. The 16th day, to be precise. The 16th day after being broken out of Edward's custody. The 16th day since she had effectively become Boxy's thing.
Good,
the mimic in question commented from somewhere behind Fizzy, its gruff voice sending chills down her spine, as usual. She stopped what she was doing and sheepishly turned to face the monster that she knew could snap her in half at a moment's notice.
Ah!
She exclaimed with a start.
Ah!
Followed by a wide-eyed scream as realization struck her.
I wrecked its head. I'm so sorry, Boxy. I didn't mean to. Honest.
She started apologizing on reflex, as she knew that Boxy needed the beast's brain intact in order to drink up the corpse. How could she not? By now, the murderous box had absorbed nearly 70 corpses right in front of her. She was at least a little bit glad that this procedure was what the monster had referred to when it claimed to have eaten her father and brother. The bodies were left as piles of ash and dust, almost as though they'd been cremated. While not a particularly popular funeral rite, nor the one she would have chosen for them, it was nonetheless better than the alternatives. Her new, more pragmatic worldview understood that something would have come along and eaten them eventually. It was much easier for her to cope with their deaths if she imagined it as Boxy sending her deceased family off in her stead. It helped, of course, that both their murderers and the ones who had failed to protect them had paid for their respective crimes against her family. Overall, it probably wasn't the healthiest way to deal with the loss of her loved ones, but it was all she had given her current situation.
"Please don't hit me,"
she pleaded.
"Okay," Boxy replied.
"Really?"
"Yes."
The gnome had become a splendidly dirty fighter, in the mimic's expert opinion. She attacked mostly from blind spots and used her small stature and ability to predict her opponent's movements to her advantage by confusing her target. This was the first time she had managed to bring down such a large creature without taking a single hit, and Boxy was quite pleased with her progress. She would surely prove herself most useful in the coming battle against the Lich if she kept this up.
"Good kill," it added.
"Thanks,"
she chanced a weak smile. This was the first bit of actual praise it had given her, so she couldn't help herself.
"Any gains?" Boxy asked.
"Mace Mastery and Divine Wrath went up."
"Paladin level?"
"Still 23.
Fizzy's growth was really quite rapid, but it still felt too slow to the mimic. It wanted the gnome to reach level 25 so that it would have the option of learning the paladin job via her mentor skill. However, Boxy was admittedly apprehensive about going through with this. It wasn't sure whether that particular job was necessarily a good idea. Its biggest worry was whether or not it would be able to properly raise its level. After all, both paladins and mimics gained levels by hitting things up close, so it wasn't sure which job the XP would go to. It wasn't as clear a divide as the warlock job had been, since there was a huge difference between blasting stuff with eldritch magic and stabbing it to death. It therefore decided, at least for the time being, that it would hold off on becoming a box-shaped paladin. If it needed to amass attributes, the cadaver absorption skill would provide plenty. Of the 73 corpses that it had absorbed since its escape, a total of 4 had been minor successes, resulting in a combined boost of 39 agility and 35 endurance. But even if Boxy didn't intend to become a paladin right away, it still wanted to have the option available. While at the moment it wanted to focus on training its mimic job, which had finally reached level 44, it did intend to look into the paladin job later on. After all, the skills these non-monster jobs granted their holders were extremely tasty. Like, for example, the latest addition to Fizzy's repertoire. Divine Wrath empowers the paladin with holy might so that they may bring down God's judgment on the deserving. Requirements: Level 20 paladin, strength of faith, strength 60. Type: active. Activation time: instant. Cost: 50 MP. Range: self. Effects: increases the effectiveness of holy spells and melee attacks by 50% for 2 seconds. Increases the duration of this skill by 2 seconds per level of this skill. This skill may not be activated more than once every 2 hours. It was a straight-up power boost with no downside or penalties, aside from the fact that, much like Power Overwhelming, it was a very flashy skill. Using it in conjunction with Stealth and Assassination was probably impossible, especially since it was a close-range technique. It was still an undeniably tasty skill that the monster would love to get its tentacles on, but unfortunately it came with a caveat. The Champion of Chaos skill. Limited precognition was nice and all, but that skill clearly had some sort of external impact on the gnome's behavior by forcing her to do and say things against her will. Boxy had already had its mind manipulated once by the dungeon in which it had been born. It had no desire to go through anything like that again. This hero business aside, the mimic enjoyed its free will far too much to give any of it up in exchange for power it didn't technically need.
So, what about the body?
Fizzy asked meekly. Had someone been watching, they'd have found it hard to believe that this was the same person who had just killed an opponent many times larger than herself without batting an eye. However, the gnome hadn't remained steadfast during the fight because she wasn't afraid. In truth, she'd been terrified the entire time, not of some oversized puppy with two tails, but of the mass of violence and teeth that was Boxy T. Morningwood. And, as it turned out, someone had indeed been watching, but had failed to remain silent whilst trying to sneak away. The branch the person had stepped on had produced a weak, barely audible sound some 20-odd meters away, but Boxy's perception-boosted senses heard it nonetheless. The mimic dashed off in the direction of the noise, leaving Fizzy momentarily alone as it hurried into the foliage. The gnome dared not move from her spot as she stared at the rustling leaves. Then she heard the screaming. The very human screaming. Boxy reappeared several seconds later, its tongue tentacles wrapped around someone slung over its lid like a bag of turnips. They'd been gagged by a fleshy tendril, but Fizzy could still make out the person's face. It was a very young woman in brown leather armor who couldn't have been more than 17 or 18 years old. She kicked, groaned, and sobbed as she tried to get away, but her efforts weren't enough to even budge, let alone break, the mimic's hold. The only thing she succeeded in doing was making tears run in rivulets down her cheeks. Fizzy steeled herself. This was the first person they'd run into, the first sign of civilization since their escape from the Spymaster. The poor gnome already knew what was about to happen. The pattern had repeated itself dozens of times already, and it was foolish to think it would stop now. Boxy brought the human girl before her and pinned her to the ground like it was the most natural thing in the world. Mud stuck to the girl's short brown hair as she flailed, the look of sheer terror on her face one that Fizzy was intimately familiar with.
"Kill!"
The order came, just as she'd known it would. The gnome brought out her oversized wrench, steadying her grip. The captive struggled in vain, tears welling in her green eyes as she realized what was about to happen. She stared pleadingly at the pink-haired gnome in front of her. "Please, save me," her gaze seemed to say. "You don't have to do this," her eyes screamed without words. The gnome hesitated for a moment. What right did she have to just murder someone? This was someone's daughter, maybe someone's sister, or perhaps even a wife or a mother. What sort of monster would spread sadness by taking away other people's loved ones? Had this girl done anything to deserve such a cruel fate? On the other hand, had her own father and brother deserved to have their lives stolen from them? And whose fault was it they had been taken from her? Who had been responsible for her unjust imprisonment? Had humans ever done anything for her or her family besides ridicule them and make their lives harder for no Gilligan-damned reason? No, that wasn't fair to the girl before her. She was a total stranger, not at all to blame for what Fizzy had endured, for what she was still enduring. However, that also meant that the gnome didn't owe her a single damned thing, and she wasn't about to suffer Boxy's wrath on some stranger's account.
"Don't blame me for this,"
she said coldly, tightening her grip on the wrench's handle.
"You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time."
A swing to either side of the girl's neck ended her barely adult life mercifully quickly. A twisted smile spread across Fizzy's face, and her eyes opened so wide one would think they were trying to escape their sockets. She shrieked,
"I have the shiniest meat bicycle!"
then reverted to her previous state of fearful misery.
"There. Done,"
she whimpered.
"I made sure the head is still intact. Did I do good?"
"Yes,"
Boxy replied simply. "Good." Fizzy looked on blankly as the mimic set about absorbing the human as though she was just another piece of meat. But she couldn't say anything. She was astonished by how easy that had been. It wasn't as though the gnome was trying to downplay or excuse her first act of murder. She knew full well what she'd done, and while she wasn't going to apologize for it, she took no pride in the act either. If anything, she was strangely indifferent to the whole affair. This was entirely due to Boxy's tutelage. The mimic thoroughly believed that notions like civility, decency, and honor were more than simply unnecessary. They were outright detrimental. Such soft and silly concepts were weaknesses, things that dulled the blade and made one take idiotic risks. It couldn't afford to have Fizzy subconsciously hold back at a crucial moment, so it had spent the past 2 weeks systematically beating those ideas out of her. In many ways, the naive little tinkerer that the mimic had met over a month ago was already dead. All that was left in her place was a broken murderer who felt not a single shred of sympathy, guilt, or remorse for her victim. The only feeling she could muster was a vague sense of pity, as if she'd just seen a stray dog get run over by a horse-drawn carriage. The girl's life had been forfeit the moment Boxy had had a hold of her. All Fizzy could have done was to make sure that her passing was as painless as possible. Which was precisely what she did, having learned her lesson with the satyrs. This time she had had true conviction behind her blows. The newbie paladin vaguely understood that her own life hung by a thread, one that would snap the moment she was deemed too much of a hassle. A ruthless monster like Boxy would never keep her around unless she was of some value to it, and she knew that it wouldn't hesitate to cut her down should she try something stupid like escaping. She probably could at least try to make a run for it,